It's been a bloody Christmas week in Iraq. Insurgents killed 10 U.S. soldiers. On Saturday, the biggest rebel attack since Saddam's capture took the lives of 13 people in the southern city of Karbala, six of them troops with a multinational force. Overnight, as most nights the past week, the sound of U.S. aircraft boomed over Baghdad as U.S. troops searched for guerrilla hideouts. From Baghdad, NPR's Julie McCarthy reports on the tableau of life in Iraq, caught between liberation and occupation.
Startled Iraqis raced to their rooftops early last week as U.S. aircraft thundered across the night sky. The distant boom, pause, and boom of artillery pounding what the Americans said were nests of insurgents kept the city awake. By week's end, the din had become routine. In war, events that seem extraordinary one day, after a day or two, become part of life's pattern. While the residents of Baghdad were resigned, if resentful toward the rumbling of U.S. aircraft in the wee morning hours, U.S. troops had a different reaction. The roar of jet engines interrupted Staff Sergeant Jared Gack's Christmas dinner at the Baghdad airport.
Jets are good. Jets usually mean they're blowing stuff up downtown. Jets around here, they're usually up to something destructive.
The contrasting attitude to jet noise is a small example of the gap that exists in the way the U.S. perceives the situation here and how the Iraqis see it. Nowhere is that gulf wider than at the gas pump. Traveling to the tense town of Samarra one recent weekend, we pass one of the gas lines that have become notorious in Iraq. Our driver says if he bought gas that way, he'd have no time to work. Varam Epikian says Iraqis with steady employment, like his as our translator, can't afford those lines.
I get my gas from black market because I have no time to stop for a long line and for 24 hours to get a gas because now all the gas stations had a long line.
Do you worry when you buy that black market gas that you're not really getting gasoline, that you're getting something that could destroy your engine?
Yes. This is possible because we are not sure what have they mixed with the liquid, but we have no other chance, no other option.
The U.S. administrators provide the same explanation week after week. Saboteurs, 250,000 new cars in the country, and striking haulers have all conspired to create shortages, they say. The Iraqis are skeptical and ask, how can one of the world's largest producers of oil have such shortages? For the Iraqis, there is little that is reliable in their country today. 8 months into the U.S. occupation, the phones still do not work with any regularity, and the electricity flickers more off than on. Conspiracy theories thrived under the old regime where people could only speculate on why things happened. The atmosphere of disruption in the post-Saddam Iraq continues to provide grist for the conspiracy mill. 26-year-old Omar Masood Hani drops his voice to a whisper to deliver a popular theory these days. Americans, he says, have already picked the next president in Iraq. They said they'd bring democracy because it served their interests, he says. It's not difficult to see why a gulf has grown up. The American occupation authority lives and works in the so-called Green Zone, a leafy world away from the grungy travails of the ordinary Iraqi. This spot of central Baghdad functions as if it were an American town, and not the dysfunctional capital that millions endure. Even David Letterman showed up on Christmas Eve to deliver his list of top 10 to the troops.
Number 2, camel. It tastes like chicken.
Quintessentially American wisecrack is lost on the Iraqis. Humor is tough to translate, but the facts on the ground make a statement that the Iraqis say they understand all too well. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, Baghdad.